Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Chronic Fatigue and Burnout Recovery Podcast. In today's episode, I'm going to do some personal updates. A while ago now, I recorded an episode, I think it was called Relapse or Recalibration. And I shared a little bit about some of the things that have been unfolding for me this year and some of the things I've been experiencing and making sense of in my own journey and my own recovery. So I really wanted to give you a little bit of an update on my personal situation. And it always feels so self-indulgent when I talk about myself, which I also realize is part of my own healing, is to be okay with taking up more space and be okay with being seen. It's very easy for me to hide behind professionalism, and I can very comfortably review a research article and talk about that. But talking about myself and my personal experiences, and I think things that feel a little bit closer to my heart and closer to home can feel a little bit vulnerable and a little bit exposing at times. So just want to say that up front as we go into this episode. So as time has gone on, I think I recorded the first episode probably end of February, beginning of March, and now we're beginning of May, so it's been a couple of months have happened and gone on since then. And I guess as time has gone on, I've been understanding my experience more. And as I've been understanding my experience more, it's also been more visible in some of the clients that I'm working with. And I'm seeing not necessarily exactly the same thing, but similar flavors of the same thing popping up with clients. And I think this is just a really helpful message for people to understand as they navigate their journey, because not all stages of healing can feel or look like progress, but in fact, sometimes feeling more or experiencing more or noticing something that feels almost like the flavor of a relapse can absolutely be a sign that your body is moving forward and your body is making amazing progress. And so that's really the message that I want to convey today. Even when things feel like they may be not going forwards, they can still very much be going forwards. So before I continue to talk, I haven't said this in a while, so maybe just a reminder, if you haven't already, to leave a review for the podcast. You can do that just by giving it a rating on iTunes or Spotify. On iTunes, you also have the option sometimes to leave a little paragraph. So if you feel very inspired, you could write a few words about how the show has helped you, what you find useful. Other people do read those and then helps them to know if their precious energy is worth being used on listening to the show. And then also, you know, if there's anything that you learn about in this episode or any of the other episodes, if you share them with someone who you think may find it helpful, or share it with your community, I would always be very, very grateful to get more of the word and the help out there. So now that I'm done procrastinating, I can talk a little bit about myself. So just to kind of back up, I can't remember actually how much of the story I shared in the previous episode, which I'm recording this now, beginning of May, but it's probably only going to publish, I think, in August. And the episode that I recorded previously is publishing next week, so mid-May. So there's going to be a delay in you getting the messages, but that doesn't matter. So anyway, when I recorded the previous episode, I shared that earlier this year, I experienced something that seemed almost like a relapse in many, many ways. I was starting to no longer tolerate things that had previously been very easily tolerated. I was starting to experience random crashes, and I was starting to notice a real big change in my anxiety levels, my emotional landscape. I was feeling very overwhelmed and very emotional. And of course, when something like this happens, there is this fear of, you know, am I going all the way back to square one? Is all the work that I've done previously completely null and void, and it didn't actually work, and now I'm going back to the beginning? And of course, none of that was true. But it took me a little bit of time to start to catch up and start to understand what was actually happening in my system. And that's what I want to share more about today. You know, things that I was experiencing were really heightened levels of anxiety, like more anxiety than I have ever experienced before, you know, waking up in the middle of the night, almost feeling like I just wanted to, you know, crawl into a little ball and hide, but at the same time, just like scream and claw. So very, very, a lot of dysregulation in my nervous system. And I was experiencing, you know, I've been resistance training now for several years, and all of a sudden workouts that I was previously tolerating, I seem really, really sensitive to. And it was winter, so I was doing some cold plunges, and even just a short cold swim was just leaving me really floored. And I remember spending a few weekends just like on the sofa, having multiple naps, just, yeah, really, really struggling in many ways. And of course, this was concerning. And I guess at the time, I also kind of knew like a few things were going on. My digestion, which has always gone through periods of feeling more stable and periods of feeling less stable, was in quite an unstable place. Definitely not the worst that it has ever been. But I was still getting a lot of loose stools, a lot of diarrhea, and yeah, basically just knowing, you know, something is not right. So I did some stool testing, and I also have, for such a long time, I've always wanted to do the Dutch cycle mapping test, which is where you collect samples across different parts of your cycle, because there has always been a cyclical pattern to my energy levels. And I was just kind of curious. I'll turn 42 this year, so, you know, coming in towards, I'm in perimenopause, and just kind of wanting to get a handle on all of that. So I did do some testing, and I think I did share in the previous episode, the stool testing came up with some mild dysbiosis. That's something that I have always been prone to, having had a ridiculous amount of antibiotics in my younger years, and some inflammation. So there's a marker called calprotectin, which is usually very, very elevated in people with inflammatory bowel conditions like Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. And mine was just a little bit raised. It was greater. It was just over 100, but, you know, can still be a sign that there's some low-level inflammation going on in the gut, which probably explained the poor bowel movements, loose stools, etc. So, you know, practically at the time, I started working on my digestion, and I kept the protocol really, really simple. And this is definitely something that I'm starting to do more so and more so in clinical practice. Like many practitioners, probably in the past, I have been a little bit heavy-handed when it comes to binders and antimicrobial herbs and all of these things. And I do think there's a place for all of these things, but what I'm finding more and more so is that going gently and slowly with people while we work on other aspects of their health, like their nervous system and like their lifestyle and their pacing, seems to actually get a lot better results. So I just did some support for the gut mucosal lining, some L-glutamine, some zinc-carnosine, and some Saccharomyces boulardii, some short-chain fatty acids, and a probiotic specific to what I was low on in the stool test. And that all, and I'm jumping around a bit, but that all seemed to work really, really well. Digestion is much more regular, much more stable, no loose stools, not as much bloating. Generally, everything heading in the right direction there. I did see my doctor. I asked them if they would repeat the calprotectin, and the calprotectin had come down, not as down to where I wanted it to be. I wanted it to be below 50. So I'm probably going to go back when I finish the next sort of round of supplements, sort of in month 3 or 4 now. So when I wrap up the sort of fourth month, then I might go back and ask to test again. So digestion's much more stable now, and it feels like it's in a really good place. And here I would also say, testing, which I had dragged my heels on because, like everyone, I don't want to spend the money. The testing was really helpful, not only to show me where the opportunity was to support my body, but also where there was opportunity not to over-support. Like, because I was, everybody's got the supplement graveyard and all these different things. And I was like, oh, I'll take a little bit of this. I'll take a little bit of that. What if this will help? What if that will help? Just things that were in the cupboard, when actually some of those things that I was trying, I didn't need at all. And so testing really helps to keep the plan simple. And just psychologically and for the nervous system, I think the more simple the supplement plan, the better. Sometimes these really complex supplement plans, where we're taking multiple different things, which need to be with food, without food, before bed, need to wait an hour until you can take this one or that one. You know, when the supplement plan is too complex and when there's too many supplements in the routine, sometimes that can feel very overwhelming to the nervous system. And it can also be the signal like, there's something wrong with you. There's something wrong with you. You need to keep on taking these things because there's something wrong with you. So as time goes on, it's really great just to make things more simple, much cleaner, much straightforward, without too much complexity, so that we can really signal to the body, it's not so much about there is something wrong with you, but much more about offering you a little bit of gentle support. I'm offering you a little bit of gentle support, but sometimes there's other factors, the ongoing pacing, the good sleep, the nervous system, self-care, good food and gentle movement really do the most of the heavy lifting. So it was really good just to have a really simple supplement plan and little by little start to notice the progress over time. So that was the digestive piece. Then the other piece was the hormones. This, I think I didn't have the test results when I recorded the previous podcast on this. So for the most part, things were pretty good on the hormonal side, apart from my testosterone, which was coming up as low. For those of you that don't know, the Dutch test is a urine test. And so sometimes when you test testosterone through the urine testing, it isn't always accurate. So I then followed up and I did a blood spot test, which I just ordered through MediCheck to double check my testosterone. And I think there's definitely Achiever Anna was, running the show at this point in time. And I was in such a sense of urgency to get these testosterone results that I just, the kit arrived and I was like, okay, I'm going to do this now so I can post it today. And I ended up taking it a little bit later in the day. And it is better to test testosterone first thing in the morning. So when I went to my GP, I also followed up and I asked them to do sex hormone binding globulin, testosterone, and free androgen index. And in terms of those results, the sex hormone binding globulin came up normal. The testosterone was, I would say it was normal, but it was like right on the very edge of the reference range. If it had been like 1 point lower, it would have been out of range. And the free androgen index, I think, was okay. So then I thought, okay, well, estrogen looks okay, progesterone looks okay. It's just this testosterone is low. Maybe the low testosterone could be a potential explanation for some of the things that have been going on. So the theory being is when I would feel more tired and just more sensitive to what's going on around me, where the same amount of life load would feel harder to manage would be in my early follicular phase. And so the theory being here is an early follicular, you don't have any progesterone, you don't have any estrogen, and not that you don't have any, but the levels are low, to be a bit more accurate. And then now with the lower testosterone, there's just less buffering for the system as a whole. So there's less hormonal buffering at that particular time of the cycle. So after going to my GP, basically, the NHS doesn't recommend testosterone replacement therapy unless I think it's specifically for libido. And so I kind of knew that, you know, when I went to the GP, she said, you know, what can I help you with today? And I said, well, to be honest, I don't think you're going to be able to help me with exactly what I need. But what would be really helpful is if you could just agree to run these tests. And then I just listed off, you know, I want this, I want this, I want this, I want this. And she was actually wonderful. She was very agreeable. She offered to run all the tests for me, everything that I requested. And then in the meantime, I booked an appointment with a private GP who specializes in menopause and perimenopause. And I know people want to know who I worked with. So the woman I worked with is Dr. Mandy Leonhardt. I don't know if I pronounced her surname correctly, but I will possibly just link to her website in the show notes. And I had to wait quite a long time. I think it was about a month before I could get an appointment with her. So she's clearly very good. And she was very good. She was very reasonably priced and she was very helpful. And the things that she recommended to me, it was very interesting. So we had this conversation about the testosterone and she said, rightly or wrongly, time will tell, she didn't think it would help me with what I was experiencing. And so we parked that. But what she did suggest was something that I wasn't expecting at all, which was she suggested estrogen replacement. And the reason why I wasn't expecting this is because I'm typically someone who's a little bit more on that estrogen dominant side of the spectrum, which means estrogen is kind of always like a little bit on the higher side. You know, I carry my weight on my hips and my bum. You know, that I would generally say I'm a bit more of like an estrogenic body type. And so the idea now that my body needs more estrogen was like, oh, okay. But what she said actually made a lot of sense. And that was because, you know, one of the things I talk about often, and there's, I've done several podcasts on this, is how when our hormones shift from high to low at the end of the cycle or, you know, pre and post ovulation, we can often experience this destabilization of the system in this transition period. And the more sensitive the individual, the more they're going to feel this drop and this fluctuation. And as health improves and as stability in the nervous system improves, we feel it less. So what I would recommend within my scope of practice is often things like edamame beans or flaxseed or, you know, certain foods or certain supplements just to support the body with estrogen-like compounds in the periods of transition. And so that's basically what Dr. Mandy suggested for me, is just no longer obviously my flaxseed and my edamame beans and food-based supports, but basically, you know, some estrogen replacement therapy support. She said to take towards the end of my cycle when I know that I'm getting a little bit, I can just feel like something is shifting. So maybe 1 or 2 days before menstruation and then the first 5 days of menstruation. So full disclaimer, I haven't actually started this yet because when I had the consultation with her, I'd literally just started my period. So I've had to wait now a month before I can start that, which will start next week. And we'll review in 3 months' time and then possibly consider adding in some progesterone as well. So there may be another podcast where I talk a little bit more about, you know, how that's gone. You know, I do have people reach out to me and ask about hormones and perimenopause on Instagram and whatnot. And I have to be really clear that hormone replacement therapy is beyond my scope of practice. It's not my area of expertise. But now that I'm going through this myself, I'm very happy to share just my personal experience. This is not necessarily advice. But I would just say for anyone wanting to explore this as an option, it's worth seeing someone private, like Dr. Mandy, because when I went to the doctor, what they wanted to give me was sertraline. That was my only option. And with her, there was this conversation, what about estrogen? What about progesterone? What about testosterone? Where in the cycle should we place it? Now, I've got some clients who are taking hormone replacement therapy at other times of the cycle. So it's not necessarily a one-size-fits-all approach, and to be able to work with someone who can advise on what you need based on your symptoms and your cycle could potentially be very helpful. As always, a sensitive individual, starting with a low dose, building it up, tracking how for improvements over time, and then also being prepared that sometimes things go wrong. We have to be prepared that things are going to go wrong sometimes, and they might not work out as well as we would like, but sometimes it's worth it just to give it a go and rule it out. Then finally, the other two things that we discussed was she wanted me to get my iron levels up. My iron levels are what I would call generally good, but there is some evidence to suggest that in athletes, higher levels of ferritin are more favorable. I loved that she called me an athlete. She's like, in my athlete clients, I find blah, 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 blah. And I was like, oh, I love that she thinks I'm an athlete, because at this point in time, I did not feel like an athlete. And so getting my iron levels up, which I'm doing, and then also taking creatine. And I did have a big tub of creatine in my cupboard, which I hadn't been taking because I didn't want to take too many things and not knowing if it was helping or not. But I've started that back up again. So that's kind of a breakdown of all the ways I've been supporting myself physically since that little recalibration, shall we call it, that I had earlier in the year. I think it's still early days to really know, especially things like the iron, the creatine, the estrogen replacement therapy, how much they're going to impact my system. But I wanted to just update you on the full picture. But then really where I wanted to circle back to, which is actually the most important part of this episode, I've somehow gone on this whole tangent about supplements and hormones, is to talk about the nervous system. Some of you listening to this podcast might be familiar with the concept of the window of tolerance. And in somatic experiencing, we also have a similar or overlapping concept, which is the concept of the energy wells. Now, energy wells are a metaphor for our capacity, our ability to be with emotions, be with intensity, be with life load. And if we have a small energy well, so for example, maybe an energy well the size of a little teeny tiny thimble, we may only be able to tolerate so much. We may only be able to tolerate so much exertion or so much mental stimulation or emotional load. But if we have an energy well, which is the size of a swimming pool or the size of the ocean, then we can really hold big emotional experiences. We have a good amount of capacity for cognitive processing, and generally just to be with all the things that come with having a very rich and wonderful life. And recovery from a nervous system perspective is really about all the things we need to do to grow our energy well, from a thimble capacity to the capacity of the ocean. But it's a slow and gradual process, and it doesn't happen at once. The energy wells in some ways are protective. You know, when I first started my healing process, you know, my capacity was really small and it could only hold so much. And little by little, based on the work that I've been doing myself, that capacity has grown and grown and grown. Therefore, now knowing how much my capacity has grown, it was very surprising, if not shocking, if not terrifying, to suddenly experience everything feels too much now. Why does everything suddenly feel overwhelming when it didn't before? Why can my body no longer tolerate the things that I used to be able to tolerate? And so that would sound potentially like a smaller energy well, but that's not true. Because here is what I really want you to take away from this episode, which is as we grow our capacity and as that energy well gets bigger and bigger, yes, we have more capacity for life and the wonderful experiences that life can bring us. But what it also means is we have more capacity for the uncomfortable experiences, the challenging experiences, and maybe even some of the trauma that we have disconnected from because previously we didn't have the capacity to deal with it, to process it, to move it through our body at the time. That would be very, very intelligent and self-protective if our capacity is really small for the body to say, I'm going to disconnect you from this until you have capacity to cope with it and process it properly. And that is exactly what happened to me earlier this year. Is we have a broad concept which is called the coupling dynamics. And the coupling dynamics refers to the way that we associate with things. And this is something we go into detail. There's modules on this in the Nurturing Resilience Program. But we can, in a regulated system, there is a real like easy and steady association and connection between different things. But in a dysregulated system, sometimes things can be overcoupled, which means two things can be overly associated with each other. And I've talked about this previously on the podcast in relation to exercise. It's like exercise and fear go together. So when someone exercises, they can have a nervous system response, which is a fear-based response to the exercise because of that overcoupling. But the other thing that we can have is undercoupling, which is lack of association, which is disconnection, which is, you know, something that we've maybe disassociated from, to use that word. And in my case, it's actually just mind-blowing and humbling because what was happening is now that my energy well was bigger, and there was more capacity. And I'd also established routines and space in my life for processing that now my body was ready to deal with some of the anxiety that I had previously been disassociated from or undercoupled from. And that's a lot of what I was working through at the beginning of the year. Is all of a sudden, I felt so sensitive to everything, not because I was more sensitive than what I used to be or more sensitive than before. I'd suddenly developed this different type of sensitivity, but because I was finally able to feel and connect with the things that I hadn't been able to feel and connect with in the past. And in this case, it was a lot of disassociated anxiety. And so now, when your body has maybe only ever really allowed you to notice 10% of your anxiety, and now it's allowing you to notice maybe 50% of your anxiety, and these are just random numbers that I'm just making up as I go, my body was going, whoa, where did this other 40% come from? And it takes time for the system to adjust and recalibrate so that it can regulate that level of anxiety. And this is the real message that I wanted to communicate today, was just because we're feeling more, just because we're noticing more sensitivity, doesn't mean that we're going backwards. What it means is that we're now potentially processing more than we have been able to process in the past. And as we learn to process more feeling or more of life in general, then we will be able to tolerate more with regulation. And I remember at this time, I think I may have told this story on the previous recording, but there was a storm. And I had taken Jacob to the vet, which was another stressor happening at the time. And because of that, I hadn't parked my car under the carport because it was awkward for getting the cat carrier in and out of the car. So I left my car outside the carport overnight, and there was a storm. And then the next morning, I was going to go to the gym, and I opened the door, and my car had flooded. And I just absolutely thought that this, the whole day, I just had this like horrible feeling, like it wasn't, was, I dealt with it. I ended up, you know, managing to get some towels and soak up the water, and I left it open in the sunshine with the windows open and all dried out and it didn't smell. And I took it to the garage and they were able to clean out the scuttle panel or scuttleboard or whatever it's called. I'm not a car person. And it was all sorted. But it just felt like the most stressful thing. Not because it was the most stressful thing, but it really was so much for my system at that moment in time that is still learning how to deal with all the feelings around it. And as time has gone on, you know, very, very gently, my system is recalibrating. The things that feel big don't feel so big anymore because I'm learning to regulate through more of the anxiety. You know, and at the time, working with my therapist, who's wonderful, I don't know if she said this just to make me feel better, but she said, you know, one month for every decade of your life. And I may have said this in the previous episode and said 1 week, which would have been wrong. But she said 1 month for every decade of your life. So 4 months. And that was kind of maybe, I think it was like the end of February. So March, April, May, June. Yeah. So we've still got a couple of months to go. And I'm just so much more aware of actually how anxious I am. And it's old anxiety. It's anxiety from a very, very young Anna who didn't have the support that she needed at the time. And so I'm working with her. And one of the things that has been the most helpful for me, and I can't remember if I shared this in the previous recording, have shared this on Instagram actually, is doing some body containment exercises. So basically what I do is when I wake up in the morning, I feed the cats and sort them out, and then I go back to bed and I sit. I have a yoga mat which is rolled up lengthways down my spine, so it really gives my spine some nice support. And then I have a very heavy yoga bolster. I sit cross-legged and I have that across my lap with another cushion on top. And as soon as I have that set up, I can start to feel my body, I can start to feel my edges, and I'm also much more connected with all the vibrations and the pulsing and the busyness and the swirling and everything that's actually going on inside of me. And for some reason, I'm realizing now I wake up very activated. I've always been a morning person, so maybe that's one of the reasons why I do find it easy to get up and go in the morning, is because there's so much energy in my system. But of course, then I'm doing from a place of dysregulation. So now what I do is I make a tea, I sit in my little containment setup, and in the beginning I just used to sit and I would cry often. I would just, you know, cry and just let anything come through. And as time went on, the crying has stopped. I've been crying so much less now. But now I just find like I yawn and my eyes tear and I'll burp. And so for those of you who don't know, this is all signs of the nervous system discharging its activation. And then after 15 minutes, I just feel like a completely different person. And then I drink my tea and then I, you know, can continue with my day. But I might even do that, you know, at some point during the day when I'm working with clients, if I've just got a little break and I feel like I need to bring my levels of activation down, I'll do it. And sometimes as well, if I've had a really busy day, I'll do it again in the evening when I finish work. And I would say I'm doing it less and less now. I always do it every morning. I'm doing it less and less during the day, which is probably a sign that I'm feeling better. You know, everybody needs to find their thing. Different things work for different people and different systems. But this has just been something I, you know, keep on saying to my therapist. I was like, this has saved my life. I don't think I would have got through the past few months without this. So it's worth mentioning on this podcast, you know, that little technique. So just to say it again, roll up a yoga mat so that, and then put it lengthways down your spine. So it's you know, it's tracking the length of your spine. I prop it up against my headboard in bed and then sit up against it. Bolster on the lap, another big cushion on top of the bolster. So you're really kind of like contained in there. And then I just put a timer on for 15 minutes. I was maybe playing some music for 15 minutes, just something really nice and gentle. But then I was finding, well, then I need to get my phone. I need to go into Spotify. And it was too much phone activity first thing. So I just left the music and just sit in silence and do my containing. So that's really what I wanted to share. And I think the big takeaway from what I wanted to share here was just there are reasons why people relapse and people do relapse. But it's usually when someone experiences, you know, when someone's done a lot of good work and they have been stable for a good amount of time, sometimes these relapses are just the system opening to a greater capacity and therefore starting to process things that couldn't be processed in the past. And also remembering that that takes energy. If now, you know, I use that example of if you could only feel 10% of anxiety before and now you're feeling 50% of your anxiety, in the beginning, when it's new and you're not used to regulating through it, then that's potentially is going to take up more energy to work with that level of processing each day. And there needs to be space in your life for that. So where my body was becoming a bit more reactive to exercise, interestingly, I think I said this before, but you know, gentle walking, gentle swimming, absolutely fine. But just more intense things, more physically demanding things like the cold plunges and the resistance workouts, I just wasn't coping with that. Because in a way, you could think of it as protection. You know, your body's just going, you need more, you need to slow down and give more space to what your nervous system needs to process right now and not be, you know, hammering your body with these workouts. So it's hard to accept sometimes that we need to make space in our lives for healing. When you have experienced a chronic illness, it can feel like so much has already been taken away. And then as you get back to doing things and back into some of the things that you love, it's natural to feel like you just want to be able to say yes to everything all the time and do everything all the time. But sometimes healing requires its own space and its own energy. And sometimes we do have to take a step back on some of life's commitments, not all the time, but you know, for periods of time while we focus on certain things that are coming up and certain things that we need to work through and process. It can feel really hard and you can feel really hard done by when you're like, but I just want to be able to do it all. I know I feel like that a lot. And why does my body have all these special needs? But there is no use in fighting it. Basically, you kind of just do, you have to make space. Otherwise, your body forces you to make the space. Unfortunately, I wish that wasn't the case, but that is the truth of it. So this feels like a good place to wrap up for today. I hope you have enjoyed listening to some of my personal reflections, listening to, or perhaps should I say understanding a little bit better about energy wells and recalibrating and why sometimes these things happen the way that they do. And hopefully if you're going through something of a similar flavor, it helps you make sense of that experience and feel less alone in that experience. And of course, if you want help feeling less alone, the Nurturing Resilience membership is a great place to be, even just to come on these group calls and talk about this stuff. You know, some people don't have places in their life where they can have these discussions with people who understand and can offer some constructive insights and feedback. So if you need more support of that nature, feel free to check out the Nurturing Resilience membership and join one of the group calls. So I wish you a wonderful rest of your day, and I'll see you in the next episode.